This is Contractor Sense with Ruth King.
Welcome to Contractor Sense. Here you discover ideas, tactics, news, and information that matters to your contracting business and you. I'm your host, Ruth King. This episode is sponsored by Financially Fit Business. Go to www.financiallyfitbusiness.com. to analyze your monthly financial statements, grow your business profitably, and build wealth in less than 10 minutes a month. Thank you for joining us. Here's how we will help your business today. Workers' comp. We started this conversation about a month ago, and we talked about step one, which was, you know, making sure that you have the right classifications and the whole background. And my guest, Kevin Ring, did such a great job and we didn't finish. So I invited him back to finish and talk about audits and preparing for audits and making sure that you're getting audited properly and all the fun things that happen with workers' comp. So Kevin, as a reminder, Kevin is the leader workers' compensation analyst at the Institute of Work Comp Professionals. So Kevin, welcome back.
Well, it's great to be back, Ruth. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a situation, and we could have probably talked for hours, and we had, you know what, 20 minutes. So anyway, let's talk about, you know, everybody hates the workers' comp audits. I do not have a client who says to me, oh, I love when my workers' comp audit is up. It takes me hours and hours and hours to prepare, and da-da-da-da-da. Do you know anybody who likes them?
No, probably. I mean, outside of the premium auditors who have chosen as a career, and presumably most of them find it fulfilling, even for us in our very simple, largely clerical business, it's a headache. And I know that it's even a more dramatic headache for construction companies.
It is. It is a major, major headache. So let's talk about some of the things that they can do that make it less than the headache. So you can be give them some ideas to make that headache a little bit less painful. And I'm going to leave it up to you. Go for it.
Well, thanks so much. And I think the place to start, and I'm sure that I said this when we spoke before, is that, you know, it's our experience in working with insurance agents over the past 20 plus years that more than 75% of premium audits are incorrect. However, most of those mistakes don't arise due to premium auditors making errors. Rather, they result from employers not understanding and knowing how to keep their records in a way that makes it possible for the auditor to do the audit correctly. And we talked some about classifications in our last conversation. There are a couple of classifications that I want to point out specifically for your audience in construction. And I'll preface this by saying that that these classifications are different in Pennsylvania and Delaware. So if you're in one of those states, you'd want to check with your agent on these. Otherwise, you have an interesting classification, which was really only introduced specifically for construction interests in the last few years. And that's code 8720, which is for construction estimators. And prior to 8720 being adapted to this purpose, you had different insurance companies handling your salespeople / estimators in different ways. Some insurance companies would put the estimators in the existing outside sales code, 8742, and you would have other insurance companies that would put the estimators in the construction classification that applies to whatever type of work you were estimating. If it was a roofing job, they would put you in the roofing code. And so if you have folks whose jobs are exclusively or largely estimating rather than doing actual construction, then you may want to talk about your agent about moving their payroll into 8720. The other classification that frequently comes up and frustrates probably everyone involved in the system is code 5606, which is for executive supervisors. And a lot of construction companies, especially folks on the smaller end of the spectrum, will often try and put the owner of the firm in 5606 or job foreman in 5606. And then they get frustrated because the insurance company says, no, that person has to go into the construction classification. And 5606 is very specific. It's really designed for the types of folks who would sit in job trailers on very large construction jobs, although it can be used in other situations. But the key thing with 5606 is that the individual who is classified as an executive supervisor must be exercising supervision through designated site forepersons. They cannot be directly supervising the labor on the job site. So, I mean, I used to have a neighbor who's a custom home builder, and he, I would say, dressed like an insurance agent every day when he went to work. He would wear a polo and probably a pair of khakis. And then one day I saw him walking down the street and he was kind of hobbled. And I said, what happened? He said, well, someone called in sick. So I had to, you know, help with the roof that we were putting on, and I fell. Thankfully, he wasn't seriously injured, but that's a clear sign that he would not go in code 5606. So you want to be careful about that and definitely talk to your agent before you try and put payroll into that executive supervisor code. Then once you make sure that you have your classifications set appropriately, and as I know we discussed the last time we chatted, with construction firms, you can often separate the payroll depending on the types of work that you're doing. So you want to keep track, very good job level records of what it is that you did on each job. And for some construction firms, this is very simple because they only build new homes, or they only do tile work or something of that nature. In other firms, it can be wildly varied, really top to bottom, basically every trade in the book. And if you have those records, it's going to be much easier for you, and then in turn the premium auditor, to separate that payroll into the appropriate classifications. But a key question when it comes to the premium audit is, what money or substitutes for money do you give your employees that does not or should not be included on your workers' compensation premium audit? And the insurance term for this is excluded remuneration. I hate insurance words, but it's a big word that's broader than just saying payroll. And there's a kind of default national list of about 16 items, and we're not going to be able to go through all of them today, but there are a couple of very common ones that I do want to highlight. The first is overtime. So with the exception of Pennsylvania and Delaware, where this rule does not apply, when you pay an employee overtime, the premium portion of their wage does not count for workers' compensation. So if, for instance, you were paying a laborer $10 an hour, they work over 40 hours in a week, they now make time and a half, so it's $15 an hour. That extra $5 an hour should not count for workers' compensation. And it's critical in your record keeping that you be able to show for each employee the amount of overtime pay they received. You don't have to break out the premium portion, but if Kevin made $50,000 last year and $15,000 of that was overtime hours, you need to have that in a separate column in your records in order for the auditor to exclude it. any payments that you as an employer make to any group health or benefit plans like a 401k or a similar type of situation are not included. So if you have a group health plan and an employee's premium is $1,000 per month, and the company pays $500 of that, and $500 of it comes out of the employee's paycheck pre-tax, the $500 that the company pays is not part of their payroll. That should not be counted for workers' compensation, where the $500 that the employee has withheld from their check does count. And this is one of many places where what you pay taxes on and what you pay workers' compensation on are not the same thing. That employee could have chosen to not participate in the company health plan for whatever reason and use that $500 however they choose. One thing that comes up reasonably frequently in questions that we get is there are some employers that will give their employees a stipend to buy their own health insurance. That is not the same thing. It has to be a company-sponsored health plan. In the same way, if you had some sort of retirement plan that had a company match, then the portion that the company contributes does not count. Expense reimbursements are another place that that things can get a little bit complicated. It's very simple if you have receipts for all of the expense reimbursements that you give to your employees. Where it gets more complicated is if you have employees that are traveling. I know this is very common in construction, where you might get a job, 6-8 hours away, and people, you know, maybe go out of town for the whole week and then come home for the weekend. If you are simply paying a per diem, let's say it's $200 per day for those folks when they're out of town, if you have receipts for the money that they spend against that per diem, you can exclude all the money that they spend. If you do not have receipts, then in most states, the rule is that you can only exclude up to a maximum of $75 per day that you can verify that they were away from home for work. And the purpose of this rule is that there have been companies that have used per diems as a substitute for payroll to essentially underpay their employees based on the market and then say, we're going to give you $1,000 a day or something ridiculous and call it a per diem. That's likely generally crafted as a way to get out of paying some taxes, but it will also wind up getting caught in the workers' comp premium audit. And the last one I wanted to mention here are employer-provided perks. So something that frustrates employers of all stripes is that bonuses are included for workers' compensation, and they're included for largely the same reason that I just talked about expense reimbursements. Because if bonuses could be excluded, then a smart business owner might pay all of their workers' minimum wage and then say, oh, every Friday is bonus day. Congratulations, you got a new bonus. Employer-provided perks can be excluded. This can include the use of company-provided automobiles. It could also include things like incentive vacations. It can include educational assistance. If you have any sort of program in your business where you will reimburse tuition if they want to continue their education, whether it's a vocational program or anything else, that educational assistance money can be excluded. But with all of these things, and I can't stress this enough, you have to keep the records. If the auditor doesn't know that that $3,000 check that you wrote to your employee is to reimburse them for an educational program, then they're going to treat it as though it was payroll of some sort, and it's going to be included on your workers' compensation. And so as with all of the things we talk about, I would encourage folks to to get with their insurance agent and talk about this, because ultimately at the end of this, when we prepare the premium audit, then, you know, it's getting those records together in a way that the auditor can recognize and understand, is the key to making this work.
Cool.
Any questions or anything you want me to clarify before I move on?
No, I've got two questions based on what you've said, and we're almost out of time, but that's okay. So I want to take the bonus situation. All right. Let's assume somebody gets payroll every single day, you know, and gets a normal, livable salary, not minimum wage or anything else like that. And the company policy is that a percentage of the net profit of the company gets distributed to each employee at the end of the year as a bonus. And it's in the policy and everybody's signed off on it. Does that still count for workers' comp or not?
Yes, it counts. The one exception there is in the state of Louisiana that explicitly allows for the exclusion of profit sharing bonuses of that type. But otherwise, yes, that is included in their payroll.
Okay. Here's my next question. Let's assume that they, you know, they do their jobs and we are tracking all of their unbillable time, i.e. time that they're in training, time that they're in meetings, you know, and things like that. So can we make that a different classification than if they're at, you know, a job site or a customer's home or office?
Probably not. What you definitely could not do is you could not put them in the clerical classification. That classification requires that you're either 100% clerical or you're 0% clerical. What you do see from time to time is construction companies putting employees in the classification, and I can't remember the code number for it off the top of my head, of construction permanent yard. And so this is, the class code is designed for employees who work in the supply yard, right? They're pulling supplies and then putting them onto the trucks for people to take to job sites. But if you have folks that are in the yard, or you may find insurance companies that are willing to put payroll there, the important caveat on that classification is that it has to be for an entire day. You can't say spend 4 hours doing, you know, being in the yard or being in a meeting or something like that, and then 4 hours the rest of the day doing other work. And when there is payroll that cannot be attributed to a specific classification, so an employee, let's say they have their payroll split across four class codes throughout the year. If there's payroll that can't be attributed to any of those four, which could include the scenario you're talking about, as well as, say, paid time off, vacation pay, that payroll by default goes into the classification where the bulk of their payroll went. So whichever code has the most payroll, that's where it would go.
All right. Unfortunately, we are out of time. So if people want more information and they want to have some of their other questions answered, where do they get in touch with you?
You can reach me at 828-274-0959. You can also see our main website, which really highlights the work we do with agents, is at workcompprofessionals.com. We also have a program that we put together specifically for employers, and it's linked from Work Comp Professionals. You can get there directly at lockedandloadedtraining.com. You can also email me at kevin@workcompprofessionals.com.
Thank you, Kevin. This has been incredibly instructive. Hopefully all of you can put everything in the right place, number one, but number two, keep your records. It will help you survive a workers' comp audit. Thank you for joining us. Choose one thing that you discovered and implement it in your business. These ideas, tactics, and strategies help you make more money, have more free time, and give back. If you like today's program, spread the word. Please review this podcast on any device you're listening to it on. Help a fellow contractor make more money, too. For comments or questions, call me at 770-729-0258 or email ruthking@hvacchannel.tv. Thanks for listening. Have a great and profitable day.